All right. Good morning to everyone and welcome to episode 5 of the Bitcoin Veterans Spaces. Glad to have you here. I am joined today by my co-host, Coleman Payne. What's up, brother? Good morning.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
We have got Jordan Gambrell on the Operation Libertas handle.
What's up, everybody? I just want to know when there's going to be a fire emoji for when that intro song is pouring.
Right. Bob Van Kirk, thanks for joining us. What's up, Bob?
Hey, good morning.
All right, for those of you who are new around here, we will be doing these spaces every single day at 10 a.m. Monday through Friday, running for an hour-ish, maybe a little longer, talking about Bitcoin, Bitcoin things. It's hosted by a crew of veterans, but any Bitcoiner is welcome to join us and share your knowledge, teaching people about this bright orange future, which is what we call the mission. That's our mission, basically, is to educate a whole bunch of new people on what Bitcoin is. Why? Because the money is fucked up. Fiat money is broken as fuck. And it needs to be fixed. And Bitcoin is probably, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many others, the best chance we have to actually fixing this gigantic Charlie Foxtrot of fiat fuckery. Man, I know I dropped a lot of F-bombs and stuff in that intro, but it's just kind of the reality, is it not? Like, it really is. Like, holy crap, man, we need to fix this. So, by the way, if you are a veteran and listening to this, and you're interested in Bitcoin, whether you're a Bitcoiner or whether you're just curious, man, throw a follow to the Bitcoin Veterans handle on Twitter, shoot a DM and say, hey, what's up, guys? Can I, like, you know, plug into your guys' info channels and maybe learn some stuff? You can hang with us. We got a ton of basically chat channels that cover a wide range of various information and topics, everything from Citadel networks to we have a crew of pilots, like a whole bunch of dudes who fly everything from F-18s to C-130s. We've got Black Hawk pilots, Kiowa pilots, Chinook pilots.
BV has its own Air Force, is what we're trying to say.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, listen, they've been talking about, like, setting up all these citadels with airstrips. So there's basically lily pads to like, you know, hop around the U.S. Like, bro, I see it happening. I mean, may take a couple of years to get that all going, but this is what I see, you know. We've got a radio channel teaching people about ham radio, Meshtastic. If, you know, if the cell networks go down, what the hell are we going to do? This is one of the favorite objections no coiners have to Bitcoin. It's like, whoa, what if the internet disappears? It's like, first of all, shut up, because it's a retarded argument. But even if it did, we have ham radio, we have Meshtastic, all those different kinds of things. You know, did you know that Bitcoin exists on satellites? It does. There are multiple satellites in orbit around the planet today with Bitcoin, full Bitcoin nodes on them. So this argument of, well, what if there's an EMP? It's like, damn, man, they better get the ones in orbit too, which I doubt, but, you know, whatever. So the other things we've got going on, like PSD, can't speak English, public school. So PTSD retreats and healing stuff, man leadership stuff led by Shane Hazel called the Brave Mission. Freaking amazing stuff. Intel cybersec sections. How to do self-custody, mining, so on and so forth. You're probably tired of me talking about it, but I'm just excited about it. So all those things. Also, check out the DIB and the Nest Daily Intelligence Bulletin that is put together once a day by our very own Randy Kelly, who's a former SEAL sniper who did various different intel things. Did you know he used to brief SEAL teams prior to them going into action on different things? He was one of the dudes, and forgive me if I'm fucking this up, Randy, this is my understanding of it. He was one of the dudes that actually went over there and was helping to teach Task Unit Bruiser, if I have that correct, that was Jocko's team, how to hunt down and capture bad guys. Like, he's an interesting cat. You should go back and listen to his episode. Excuse me for the audio interruption there. You should go back and listen to his episode where he shared the story of him almost completely fucking up an op. Anyway, that was hilarious, dude. It was so funny. You should go listen to it. What else? Yeah, let's just jump into some stuff. Also want to welcome up, we've got Mickey Koss. Good morning, AC. Good morning, Shane Hazel. How you doing, brother?
I'm fired up, man. Holy cow. I mean, you just ran through a laundry list that doesn't even cover everything, and it's gigantic. I mean, trying to keep up with everything that's going on in this space, unreal. And hats off to everybody who's doing it. I'm so excited. It's Friday. We're at 61K right now, and it looks like it's just, I mean, they're trying to hold it back as much as possible. But, Freedom Tech is on the move, and this is the place to be.
That's the thing that I think is cool about kind of things we talk about is like it's not always just Bitcoin. Like how long did Alex just spend talking about Meshtastic and these other devices that can supplement Bitcoin, but also are just its own thing and useful in its own manner. Like Freedom Tech in general is just awesome.
Jacob would just dropped in our sort of back channel chat that Bitcoin has moved up over 1% since starting our morning show. You're welcome.
It looks like the Fed's starting to signal a pivot. I just saw something. Give me a sec. Oh, it's okay. Coleman just put it up in the nest. Yeah. So I don't know. That probably explains it. 7 minutes ago.
No, it was definitely us, Mickey. It had nothing to do with Jerome Powell.
I mean, what's 0.75 before the end of the year going to do anyway, right?
Liquidity. So it's not about the interest rate changes. It's about the net change to liquidity, and that's moving up globally. So, you can see, like, what's the difference between, you know, 4 and 5%, but it could potentially be like trillions and trillions of dollars in global liquidity to move it because the bond market has gotten so fat. And so that's what you got to look at. It's not like, oh, 25 basis points. It's like, oh, that's $17 trillion.
Yeah, Dr. Jeff has kind of been calling that for a long time, Mickey, what you're talking about, that the liquidity spigot was going to pretty much open in September. He's been joking about, you know, Michael Jackson's birthday, which I believe is August 29, saying that, you know, you want to be locked and loaded in Bitcoin before Michael Jackson's birthday because the liquidity will start to open up right after his birthday. And so far, things seem to be lined up that way.
Yeah, it seems pretty prescient. I remember him saying that back in like Q1 of this year, I think.
Jamona! I want to make a quick shout out to Gabe Lord, the head of Operation Bitcoin in the audience. He's an absolute baller, basically leading an initiative, to educate and prepare veterans with tools to get them jobs in the Bitcoin ecosystem. It's a very noble and honorable thing to do, my man. Very proud of you. Also want to shout out Punchplate in the audience. Throw Punchplate, a follow. Punchplate, if you want to come up on the stage, I'm throwing you an invite. Punchplate is one of our partners, advertising partners. They are freaking fantastic. I love them. I've used, by the way, I'm not just saying that because they sponsor our show. I used Punchplate way before they became a sponsor. I've been using them for years. Like the best, in my opinion, seed plates that are out there. I like them. Okay, let's talk about some current events type stuff. This is going to probably be relevant to people who are military, prior military, active duty. So Trump is apparently out there having made multiple references to a massive senior leadership change at the Pentagon should be he elected president in November. This, by the way, is needed direly. The current situation is pretty bad. The military of today is absolutely infested with woke mind virus and DEI leadership. The politics at the top of the organizations are really bad. Our actual combat readiness has probably been never been worse in my entire history as an adult human being, having served in the United States military and observed it over my entire lifetime. We probably are at the worst place we've ever been from a combat readiness standpoint. God forbid we actually got into a shooting war with China right now. I don't think it would be good, guys. I really don't. Can we get some thoughts on this proposed change of leadership and, you know, where we are today?
I mean, I would just start out by, I would kind of tamper expectations because, sure, he put in Mattis last time and that was supposed to be like, oh, I'm putting in this real tough guy who's going to change things up. But then as soon as Trump wants to pull out of Syria, Mattis is like, no, we're not doing that. So I would like to see him put somebody in that will make changes. But I also want to, I would hope that Trump would like do what he's known for and say you're fired when they don't listen to him. I'm sick of these presidents like putting in a strong military leader to make them think they're tough, but then they just come off super weak because they just bend over backwards for these tough generals. It's like, that's not being tough. Being tough is telling them where to shove it when they're not listening to you.
Gene Hazel, I know you have some thoughts here.
Boy, my head's spinning with this question. And I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be a naysayer and a doomer on a Friday. I guess one of the things that I think, you know, is important to kind of realize is he's actually, you know, going back and offering, I guess, you know, to reinstate a whole bunch of guys that refused the shots. And I, you know, first and foremost, I guess a good thing. I mean, you know, I think people need to remember, first and foremost, he is the commander of Operation Warp Speed. And so if anything, you know, this is something we need to keep in the back of our brain, you know, and, you know, his allegiance with, you know, the Israelis that are doing some genocidal stuff over there right now. Like, it doesn't give me a real warm fuzzy yet. And I, you know, I'm starting to think, you know, as my mind's wandering through this, as you start to understand, like, you've got to have these guys that came up in, you know, the early 2000s through the, you know, mid 2000s that have all the damn combat experience. Like, those guys started getting routed out probably around 2008, 2009 when Barack Obama came into office. You know, there was a bunch of guys, you know, guys that I'm, you know, dear friends with, that have, you know, all the tattoos, you know, all the way down, you know, up to almost their neck, where, you know, it's just one of those things where, like, those guys were the absolute gangsters in the Marine Corps and special operations. And to try to, you know, pull those guys back in after what they've seen, I don't think they're going to do it. That's just my opinion. And for the leadership side, the officer class, this is another thing. You know, once you start to hit the lieutenant colonel side, it's all political. And so anybody who's above the colonel side, I think, is suspect for still being around. So what do? You start to cull down to your captains, maybe where they haven't been infected by this mind virus? The, you know, what, who was our guest that came on out of Space Force?
Lohmeyer.
Yeah, Lohmeyer, man. You know, that guy makes it a perfect point when he talks about the DEI situation. Is all of these guys, whether they spoke up and side of the DEI or they didn't speak up and they just held their tongue, you know, that's a sign of cowardice. It's a sign of, you know, political advancement. And that's one thing we can't have. You can't have a military that is it's full of yes men. And I mean, I saw it even back in, you know, in early 2000s when I was in, man, like, I think there's a long way to go. I think this is, you know, a generational push. I think decentralization is one of those pieces that's going to probably play into this as, you know, things change. This parallel economy that we're starting is forcing. But I don't know, you know, can we somehow manage a decline? Because yeah, I think you're right, Alex. Like, you know, if we went into a no kidding hot shooting war with China, I'm not saying, you know, the US gets invaded and we lose, but at the same time, you know, if this is on some other ground, whether it's, you know, not China and not America's soil, you know, things don't look good. You can look at training videos of how not only the Chinese train from childhood and the Russians train from childhood versus what we're doing in, you know, the indoctrination, you know, the youth indoctrination schools in America, where they're just being fluffed up and, you know, saturated and gagged with all sorts of DEI bullshit. We've got some generational work to do. And I think that's more of a decentralized local look than a, you know, top down approach where some, you know, politicians going to quote unquote fix things.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about training videos. We just got whooped by the guys on freaking monkey bars.
Well, I mean, just the whole cultural difference, right? Like, what's the difference? Like, you know, the Asian parent thing, by the way, I'm Asian, is real. You know what I mean? The whole, oh, you got a B+ on your blood test. No food for you. Come back when you get A+ on your blood test. That's shit's real, right? So like their whole culture is all about that kind of stuff, where our culture is all about, oh, you don't feel like a boy today? Let's chop your dick off. It's okay. Like, what the actual F is happening? You know, there's a pretty big difference. Coleman, you had a thought here.
I think Shane hit it right. It starts off in the school system. We praise mediocrity. Like, and if you're too outstanding, we put limits on you because we don't want you to shine too bright. My wife was showing me something last night I just thought was just completely silly. That breakdancer from Australia. Just a complete train wreck. I'm not sure if you guys saw it, but she made a video and she was condemning people that were making fun of her because she thought that she did her absolute best. And I think that's where it goes wrong. If you can't tell someone that they did a horrible job and their feelings get hurt and they go on social media and start whining, there's not a lot of hope for society.
Yeah, I hope people in this space like have the attitude of you want to be a badass motherfucker and you want to be the best at whatever you do. And when you fail at something, it's because of your own shortcomings that you need to work to get better. And that is the mentality you should have with like everything in your life. Is there's nothing like, and regardless of what's happening in the political space or the financial sector, like screw all that. Like, what are you doing to make life better for you and your community? Like, we can do this. We don't need them to toe the line for us. Just go out there and shape the world the way you can to make it better. Like, we can do this.
Yeah, and if you haven't failed, and in my point of view, you haven't pushed yourself hard enough. Like, that's how you learn from your mistakes. You learn. You have to go out there. You have to fail. You have to figure out how to get back up and do it a different way.
Yeah, and to Coleman's point here, you know, if kids grow up and regardless of their performance, they're like, you're doing great, you know, even when they're doing bad, what you're actually doing is you're doing them a great disservice by training them that way. Because what you're actually teaching them is that their decisions and their performance have no consequences. And that is not real. Like, that's fairy tale land. Like, the world doesn't actually work that way. The world is a brutal place. And if you're not prepared for it and you grow up with this mindset, many of these kids growing up nowadays have this mindset where they think that they're awesome because they've always been told you're great, even if they suck at something, and they're completely disconnected from the consequences of their decisions, which causes massive, massive mental health problems. You wonder why dudes are running around and girls are running around with freaking purple hair and shit. And they're completely, completely deranged. This is part of the problem.
Alex, I think you're 100% right. And I think, you know, when we get down to it, is I think it's upon this community to raise that generation. You know, some of the things that we practice here, homeschool, lots of jujitsu, firearms training, really, you know, some pretty uncomfortable stuff that I think would make most of the blue hairs out there almost have a fucking stroke. And that's I think, you know, maybe sort of the healing process here is as we go through this healing process where the malincentives are laid to waste and a new form of, you know, proof of work comes into being, you're going to see these kids who are not coddled, who are, you know, absolutely indoctrinated by the Bitcoin sector. And I'm not going to mince words. Like, I'm indoctrinating my kids. I'm not going to lie. Like, can they be free thinkers? Absolutely. But they're going to get my spin on indoctrination, which is complete freedom. And to have that, that's responsibility. You know, there's so much responsibility that we have to bake into these kids. And there's this understanding that life isn't easy. Like this whole, you know, epoch, this thing that we've gone through since like the late, I don't know, like 1940s. It's a fairy tale. It's a veneer and it's bullshit. And so now, you know, it's up to us to sit there and right the ship. And it's not an easy thing because, you know, these kids are going to look out and be like, well, look at what all these other kids are doing. And you're like, yeah. And here's what's going to happen is when things come apart, those kids aren't going to be prepared. They're not going to be prepared to build a new nation. They're not going to be prepared to build back their community. They're not going to be prepared to be, you know, these leaders that we're going to absolutely need as this thing comes apart. And you guys were mentioning yesterday, you know, with Larry Lepard, like there are some very serious things coming because the communists, the Zionists, whatever you want to call these collectivists that think that they can, you know, abuse and mistreat and oppress and kill and rape and coerce the rest of us. Like, this is coming to an end. Bitcoin is literally exposing this and putting it to an end. And as these guys are backed into a corner, they have to go for broke. I don't think people really understand that the time frame between now and the election period and after the election period, these guys have to pull every absolute trick that they have, because if they don't, they're done. They're done to the point where there are trials. There is a mass swinging of the pendulum where they don't control the media anymore. They don't control finance anymore. They don't control politics anymore. And as that thing comes undone, they are going to do anything and everything they can. If they've got their fingers on the power buttons, which a lot of them do, we're in for the fight of our lives.
Is this Friday morning, Shane, or is this everyday Shane? I'm here for it. I'm just wondering.
Special treat on Friday.
Decentralized Shane.
So one thing I want to comment on. I'm not sure, Shane, where you're getting the Zionists are equal to communists thing. I'm curious about that. I don't think we should discuss it now. But I think you and I should sit down sometime. I'm curious to pick your brain on why you think that. And I'm sure you have your reasons. I know this guy pretty well. So if he says something, he's got reasons for why he's saying it, but I just don't know what they are.
Well, I think he's mostly talking about collectivists and like kind of loop joining them all together.
Yeah, look, I mean, we talked about this on our video pod earlier this week, where it's like, if you look at, if you're a multinational corporation, right? Or you're a communist / Marxist, the processes by which you get results that benefit you are similar. So there's actually this really weird alliance occurring between large corporations and, you know, people who are basically Marxists, because the objectives or the processes by which they achieve their objectives are similar. And it's quite a bizarre alignment. I'll be a little more precise about that, because this may sound really crazy. Let me see if I can articulate what I'm saying here. If you can increase consumerism, if you're an international megacorp, this is good. If you can further extract wealth from the masses of the population, you know, if you're a megacorp, this is good. If you can create more consumers by breaking up families and creating, you know, two workers in a home instead of one, and you're a megacorp, this is good. Now, if you're a communist or a Marxist, if you can break up families and create this really weird situation where everybody hates each other because there's all this contention, this is good. This is what color revolutions are born from, right? You need to get everybody fighting against each other. It's got to be all racism and all male versus female all the time. And people have to be confused, right? That's all good. If you get people who are running on a hamster wheel 24/7 trying to keep pace with the prices of things running away from you, and you don't, you know, you get people to the point where they just literally do not have the time or energy to sit down for just a minute and think about the system and why the system is broken. If you're a Marxist, this is good. You understand? Like, all of these things are actually in alignment. We have this really weird confluence of behavioral incentives occurring right now. I'll stop there.
Yeah, Alex, I think that's a really good point. And it makes me think of just watching the reactions of the market on Bitcoin price. Like, when people buy Bitcoin for the first time, you know, some people bought it in the 70s, right? And now here we sit at 61 or wherever, and people are freaking out about it. And it's like, you have to do the work, right? You have to learn about it. You can't just own it. Like, if you just buy it and it goes up, you're not experiencing Bitcoin. You're just lucky. You haven't put in the time. You haven't put in the effort. And in it going down, it makes people put in that effort to learn about it and understand it. Otherwise, they just sell lower than where they bought it at, and they're out. And so I think it kind of goes back to what we were talking about with, you know, people need to struggle, or people need to work hard in order to see results. You need to be working on yourself. And I think Bitcoin makes you do that.
Yeah, that's right. Bitcoin is a bit of a crucible, isn't it? It will certainly refine you. And in my observation, it'll also spit you out. If your character and your values and your incentives are not really aligned with low time preference building for the future, it pretty much spits you out. If someone's fiat minded, in other words, it spits you out.
Do you think that it overlaps at all? Anybody, I guess, Shane too, like with the collectivist mindset, do you think that some of those people that come in are found to be, you know, spit out or tourists, or more akin to doing that? Or do we notice any of that?
What do you mean by collectivist mindset?
Well, there's a lot of people who just blindly, especially some younger people, who just blindly trust the institutions. And I don't mean financial institutions, I mean just all of our institutions, right? Like, they blindly trust the government, or they put all their faith in, you know, whatever it is, any type of government institution and the powers that be. And they don't think about the fact that the money is broken, or other things are broken because of the money. They just blindly trust.
Shane, you want to go with that one?
Yeah, I think our culture is just full of a lot of blind trust, right? I mean, and I think it's becoming less and less, though. When you look at, you know, and I guess the way to measure this is, if you look at the major, quote unquote, you know, political parties in America, you're really looking at the Democrats and Republicans, and they're, you know, they were, you know, about 2018, last time I really looked at it, they were probably around 18, 19, 20% of the, you know, the population of the U.S., where that's not a lot. You know, you're really looking at it. People who are literally registered Democrats and Republicans only make up somewhere around 40%. And that was 2018. That's becoming less and less favorable. And so the people who are just blindly following, I think is, I think they're dying off. I think a lot of the, it is generational. I don't want to go into like, hey, it's just boomers, but, you know,
But they were the boomers.
Yeah, they were the first generation that was literally taking, you know, out of the farms and the muck and the mire and all that fun stuff, and then, you know, put through the indoctrination system here in America. They, you know, they had nothing but three channels. Everything was controlled. And you know, it's really now is like, all right, well, how are we waking up and how are we decentralizing? I think there's a lot more push in the pendulum swinging in that direction than just this blind allegiance. It's out there and it's amplified. And I think you have to understand that the reason why it seems like there's so damn many of them is because they're closest to the money printer. They're closest to the propaganda machines. They're closest to, you know, anything that they need to amplify their information. And when you understand who owns that, those are the people who make little things look huge. They're the reason why, you know, people blow up automatically overnight. This is what we're talking about. And you know the whole Marxism thing. Well, Marx was a Zionist too, and this is, you know, we can get into this another time, but I'm going to tell you right now, like, this is a reckoning that is absolutely coming that needs to have that discussion. This when there is a superiority complex amongst people that believe that they can, you know, put other people in their place or do what they need to do with them, you know, that's, you look at the highest echelon that's out there. We all know what's going on. We all know who's doing it. It's just one of those things where people haven't gotten comfortable with identifying it yet, and they're not down with they don't understand the nuance of the verbiage that we're using. And that's I think what we need to clear up.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure people actually know. Like, I don't, first of all, people have to be aware that there's a problem. And on a surface level, I think the vast majority of people don't. I mean, people know that things aren't great, but they have no idea why. And a lot of them, I'm talking to the majority of the population, don't have the time to think about it and figure it out. Well, at least, I shouldn't say they don't have the time. They're exhausted, right? And they're crunched for time. And spending the time that the little bit of time that they do have, that they can spend with their families or to decompress from running on the hamster wheel, is usually not spent seeking out the foundations of why the systems in the world work the way they do. So it's tough, man, finding that all, finding the truth and all of that. And it's a tough thing. I want to shout out Alpha Zeta in the audience. Going to throw you an invite. You're welcome to come up here if you would like to. For those of you who don't know, Alpha Zeta is a very brilliant thinker in the Bitcoin ecosystem. So if you feel like joining us, you're welcome to. Mickey, do you have any thoughts on that last topic? Or Coleman?
Yeah, I just was going to spin off of what you just said. I think people are coming home tired, and they're choosing, you know, not to invest it and just turn on the TV and watch Netflix. I think that comes down again to a lot of what we discussed earlier, where people just don't know how to push themselves. You know, they just think they get home, you know, they're eating bad food, they don't work out, so they feel like crap. They've never pushed through that and tried to expand their knowledge, expand with their physical fitness. And I think it all just comes down to that. We're not teaching that anymore. We're not putting an emphasis on reading books, on getting out and going for a run, going for a walk. It's just sit down, watch this new TV show. We released 8 episodes. How many nights is it going to take you to watch all 8?
I'm going to jump in and add something there. It seems that there's a plague of what's called learned helplessness that is really just, it has penetrated every level of our society. People in general, they don't even have the energy or the initiative to dig into the problems that they're experiencing, that our entire planet is experiencing. They can't even muster up the energy to take a closer look and to dig into it, because there's just this apathy that has set in and this general acceptance that this is just the way that things are. Hey, inflation, what are you going to do about it? Taxes, that's just part of life. And so there's it's almost as though they've just got their head sitting on the block, and they know that eventually the axe is coming down, and they're just going to go ahead and deal with it. And that learned helplessness is devastating to a society in general. And it is the kind of thing that just allows people, that puts people in a position where they're going to allow others to just walk all over them and to literally drain their life force until they're gone. And they just accept it as part of life. And that's, and I know that sounds fucking awful, because it is, but we can have hope. Because the number of people that can see the path, that know the way to move above and past that and through that into a different future, the number of those people is growing every single day, and we see it around us. And that's the importance of our mission and what we do and how we show up in this every single day. And that's why what we're doing is relevant, and it's important, and it matters, because people need to just have someone grab them by the freaking shoulders and shake them around a little bit and say, wake up, pay attention to what the hell's going on. You can do something here. You've got to activate your mind, and you have to find the motivation and initiative to improve your fucking condition in life if you ever want it to get better. And if it's not, if you're not going to do it for you, if someone has just lost all hope for them damn selves, you know, do it for their kids, do it for the next generation, because there are more people coming behind us, and we owe it to them to create a world that's different than the one that we're in right now.
Okay, I might add one thing, and then I'll let you go, Wade. And that is, people have to have hope. And I think that's what Bitcoin represents, is hope. I think that, you know, once you start to understand what Bitcoin is, what you start to understand what Bitcoin can do in terms of creating leverage in your life, really all this hamster wheel running really comes down to, well, I mean, why are you even on the hamster wheel? You're trying to chase these things we call dollars, right? It's the fiat mining thing. Fiat mining phenomenon. Because why? Because you have bills. Because you have to have a place to live. You have to have clothes. You have to have transportation. You have to have food to eat. You have to have education. You have to have all these things, right? So the amazing part about Bitcoin is that it's like, once you start to accumulate it, and once you start to watch how it behaves, you start to realize that you won't always have to run forever at the speed that you're running. That you will be able to start taking your foot off the gas, that you will be able to start carving out time in your life to spend with your family and to do things you really want to do. And time is the most valuable thing we've got. You never get more of that. You know, once those seconds tick by, you're never getting them back. So understanding how to create leverage in your life so that you can carve out more time is really the most important thing any one of us can do as human beings, in my opinion. Because it allows you to pursue the things that really matter with your family and your spouses and your kids and your friends and, like, your boys. And there's a really cool thing coming up here pretty soon. I'll let you go in 1 second. Wait, I'm almost done. One of my guys who, he's got an amazing story. Some of you have heard me talk about this guy before. I'm not going to say his name. He's a very private person. We're never going to say his real name. But, I'm going to call him Tim for now. He's going to be coming on the show here soon, and he's going to tell his story. He's going to explain how 10 years ago in 2014, for several years, all he did was took everything he possibly could and bought Bitcoin. And, you know, many of us have not been in this game for 10 years. So we're only basing what we think is going to happen on our logic and our reasoning and math and so on and so forth. But we haven't actually lived this life. This guy's lived the life. You know, he's, for several years, he sacrificed massively and put everything he could into Bitcoin. And today he lives a life that is absolutely mind-blowing. And he's going to come on this show and he's going to talk about it and explain to you what it's actually like. You guys are not going to believe this shit. I don't believe it. I talk to him almost every day. And I'm like, dude, it's completely unreasonable the way you live. And he's like, yeah, I know. But this is all good. His thing is like, he's like, Alex, this is going to be you in 10 years. Because you just keep stacking. That's the way the math works. It's going to be, it's mind-blowing. Wade, go ahead.
Two things come to mind. The first is, if you have three people and two of them sneak into the camp of the other two guys in the middle of the night and steal half their shit, you know, they steal all their food, then in the morning, all the two people do is fight. They don't have any idea who's stealing it. And then the system currently requires fear, not hope. So they place fear in people. If you're a government employee and work for the EPA, your job's going to be gone. If you identify as something different, you're going to be destroyed if the government's not there to protect you. It's not that anybody's out to kill anyone. It's that they're instilled with this fear, and that's why you see meltdowns after elections, people on sidewalks, you know, falling to their knees. The system that exists requires fear. So Bitcoin requiring hope, trying to instill hope in people who are already fearful, that's really hard. So the people on that spectrum of always afraid of existing without government, it's not just they'll lose the roads, it's that they'll lose their lives. There's actually some people that are actually that scared.
Yeah, yeah, and you can see them feed it, right? Because they talk about that stuff. They're like, this is all bad things that are going to happen to you if this other guy gets in office. Yeah, true. All right, what else do you guys want to hit? Coleman, why are you a Bitcoiner?
For freedom, for time, to allow me to do what I want to do with my life and not require to rely on the government when I want to retire.
There's a lot of that going on. Social Security, Medicare. How many people are relying upon that right now?
Yeah, it's definitely not going to be around when I'm ready to retire. I can't see who's speaking right now or who spoke earlier, but they're right. Time. Like, what can you do to get time right now? Because this is the only thing that's scarce. And I own a business, and so I worked really hard at the beginning of it, as most small business owners do. And I missed like 4 years of my kid's life. It's all consuming. And once I started to realize, I think my son turned 10, and I realized, like, holy crap, I only have 8 more years left, really. And I even have less than 8 years, because once he starts hitting 13 or 14, like, everything's pretty much formed. And so I wanted to make sure I was there. So I really took a stand. I stepped back from the business and tried to have, policies and procedures where it could be self-sufficient. And so now my time is spent at home. I can't tell you how life-changing it is once you change that focus in life and spend time with your family and your kids. You know, people say work hard when you're young so you can spend time, retirement when you're older. But your kids are only young once. And then once they move out, they're going to have their own family, their own friends, their own jobs. So cherish this time.
Man, I totally agree with that. Shout outs to Tao in the audience, throwing you an invite to come up. Also to Dr. Lewis, if you want to come up as well. Yeah, I agree with that, man. Like, if you could create a life where you can spend more time with your family now versus when you're, quote, retired, why wouldn't you do that? I think just most people have no idea what that even looks like or how to go about it.
Yeah, it's just backwards thinking, because that's what we're, again, that's what we're quote unquote trained to do.
I was talking to a gal yesterday who basically said to me that she plans her life based upon what her current expenses are. And the issue with that is that those expenses are always going to rise based on inflation, right? So you're basically, your whole life will be a series of just trying to catch up, and you'll never actually get ahead. You'll never actually hit what I call escape velocity, where you're getting ahead of the money curve, so to speak, where you're actually starting to carve out time in your life. And I learned this thing from one of my mentors a long time ago. He said to me, he goes, Alex, he goes, don't think of life in terms of what kind of necessarily career you want to have or what you want to do as a business. He goes, most people do it that way, and then they end up trying to chase goals forever. Not that we don't want to chase goals, we do, but it was like, the difference is that he goes, if you think of your life the way you want it to be, just imagine the life you want to have and then work backwards from there. Think of the life you want to have and then ask yourself, how much would it take in terms of either income or, you know, wealth to live that life? And then work backwards from there. What do you have to do to create that kind of income or wealth? And that, and let that guide the steps that you take instead of doing it the other way.
That is the way, and that's great, Alex. The problem, of course, is that in the fiat world, you know, when you sit down and you try to plan, whether you have a planner or some traditional or, you know, legacy portfolio advisor, is that they sit down and say, well, here's the amount of money you need to live that life, and here's how much you can shave off every year for this or that. But due to inflation and due to the numbers being broken, it's like you can't plan on those numbers, right? You can plan on the purchasing power, the spending ability that you need. And, you know, that's why we're Bitcoiners, because we want to be able to preserve that and carry that forward for all of our preferences and choices. But, you know, you just think back even 10 years ago, it's like, what were financial planners telling people? Oh, this is the amount you need to retire. You know, you need $1 million, and then you can take 4% here and then 4% there. And it's like, no, that $1 million is, you know, $400,000 in purchasing power today. But yeah, that is the way.
Yeah, like if you're thinking about things in terms of inflation-adjusted targets, right, for what you think you need, like what assets are actually, A, going to keep up with inflation, but more importantly, create leverage up and above the rate of inflation? And that's where I think Bitcoin is like the most amazing thing I've ever seen, because Bitcoin creates more leverage than anything I think the human race has ever seen. And this is a basic math thing. You know, it comes back to that there will only be 21 million. It has got an absolute inflation rate of zero, and it's the first thing the human race has ever seen that's like that. So I think it's also going to be the most efficient thing possible to not only beat inflation, but create massive leverage up and above inflation numbers. The crazy thing about that is, I think that as inflation continues to accelerate, and I think it's been accelerating substantially, that's all everybody is talking about right now. This is just the beginning, right? You look at Weimar, for example, like that was like a 9-10 year process. They had 7 years of very high to very, very high inflation before actual hyperinflation hit. And I suspect that the more they print, the more powerful Bitcoin is going to become over time.
Yeah, it's really just the pain that goes along with it, right, for the rest of society. I mean, we're all kind of islands, so to speak. I mean, obviously, you know, we have we're centers of influence, but a lot of people around you, I'm sure, have laughed at you about Bitcoin along the way. The people that listen are going to be a little bit better protected, but everybody else, I mean, it's going to be pain all around us. And so the question is like, what does that look like? Can it be slow and just slowly bleed over into Bitcoin? Or is it going to be, yeah, real painful, like in Weimar when they all woke up and everything was a disaster?
And Bitcoin reduces the size of the pot that they can steal from. So as the pot goes, you know, is shrunk, who is left holding onto that pot? Now, somebody's going to be left holding the pot, but you know, is it going to be you?
Tao, good morning. What's up, brother? Long time. Oh, Tao, you let me down. Your finger's got to be on that mute button. Got to be ready to go.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning, brother.
Hey, so, you know, when I saw this Bitcoin veterans profile starting a space, I've always thought it was like about war, guns, army, those sort of just topics. But now, you know, I come in here, I know that's not the case, and you guys have a really great topics to talk about. And Alex, you've always had a knack for running, you know, awesome spaces. Really quick, what you guys said earlier about life and working backwards and everything, man, that is straight alpha. Because, you know, when people get to a certain age, they question, right? They question, okay, well, what is the purpose of midlife crisis? Whatever may be the case, how should they approach it? And I've been recently feeling this, right? Because, you know, my company, we recently, you know, had to downsize and, you know, things happen, right? And then you start feeling this sort of like nervousness or anxiety within yourself about, well, you know, what do you do to make sure you recover or make sure that you're going to be okay, right? And I was also questioning myself. I was like, why is this happening to me? I mean, I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to have to feel this nervousness within me. And I question and say, like, life just goes on, right? If something changes, you just have to adjust and then move on. But what I did as well was like, wow, do I spend even more time with work and try to make sure that this doesn't happen? You know, there's no guarantees, no matter how hard or whatever. But I can tell you this for sure, is I can guarantee you will regret it if you do not use that time to spend with your kids, like you guys said, regardless of work, how important it may seem, how much there is. You need to focus on your kids. And so what I've done now is realize that sort of thing. And I'm like, you know what? I don't care. I don't care what I have, what's next on my plate. If my kid has volleyball practice, if my kid needs that, if they want to go get a Jamba Juice or whatever, I'm there. Let's go and do it. Simple stuff. Like, I'm putting them on top priority so that I say, hey, I'm going to spend time with you. And it could be as simple as, driving them to the dentist or doing something. That is still interaction. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you have to go and have fun, okay? As long as you're interacting with them, that is something you have to cherish. It's a beautiful thing because you have a deep conversation. You teach each other about, you know, anything, right? They'll tell you about school. They'll tell you about, my friend, this and that, whatever. It could be anything, but that sort of interaction is very important. And, you know, time is the most precious thing. And like you guys said, if once you get older, they'll have their sort of their own life. And even if you wanted that time, you know, you're kind of getting in the way of their time and their life. So thank you for reiterating that and just to reconfirm what I've been kind of sort of thinking as well. So thanks a lot for that, guys.
Yeah, 100%. That's definitely something that I notice within our homeschool group, is that the parents who spend more time with their children, they have a tighter bond. You can just tell the difference between, you know, parents who are with their kids all the time and parents who only see them in the evenings. There's a completely different family dynamic. If anyone is able to do it, I strongly encourage you to try and do it. It is ultimately life changing. And at the end of the day, who would you rather raise your kids than yourself? Like, if you have that opportunity, seize it.
I'll add one quick thought here, and that is, a lot of people, I think, are operating on the assumption that they have to entertain their kids and keep their kids entertained, and that, you know, you have to be your kid's friend. Now, there's nothing wrong with being your kid's friend, okay? But I will point out, this is just my opinion, our primary responsibility as parents is not to be your kid's friend, but to prepare them for life. And sometimes that means, you know, tough love. It doesn't necessarily mean just entertaining those children. A lot of times people are like, oh man, spend time with my kids. Holy crap, I have no time. What are you talking about? This is what we're saying, guys. You got to create leverage in your life so that you can carve out and reclaim back some of your time. And the time that you spend with them doesn't have to be in entertaining them. It doesn't even have to be in, you know, sitting around being friends or whatever. Sometimes it's just like doing the hard things. I'll tell you a really quick story and then I'll stop. But my daughter used to sit in my office with me while I was working, doing her homework. We weren't even talking that much because I was working and she was doing her homework. But even to this day, as an adult, she tells me that was some of the most awesome memories for her. just being present. So just something to think about.
Yeah, that's the key word. Be present. Be present in your life. I know everyone's on their phone, but if you can and your kid's in the room, set it down. You don't want your kids to remember you as just always being on your phone, especially if you have little time with them.
All right, we are running up towards the top of the hour. I would like to make some mentions of our partners really quick. And while I'm doing that, those of you who are up here, think about some closing comments, and then we'll do that and finally wrap up. So for our partners, we've got a couple of really great ones. Check out slnt.com/BTCVets to save 15% plus free shipping on qualifying orders of stuff that will protect your electronics. They do Faraday bags, basically, that protect against radio interference, radio transmission, EMP, all that kind of stuff. Those Bitcoin wallets are pretty important. I mean, obviously, you should be backing your stuff up with seed plates and whatnot, but if you want to protect your critical electronic infrastructure, maybe something to think about. Also, go check out Black Sheep Ammunition. It's a veteran-owned, veteran-run company. They were very cool in providing a whole bunch of ammo for our range day in Nashville. Great guys, Black Sheep Ammunition. Next, we have solosatoshi.com. Solo Satoshi, these are the guys that are out there doing the bid axes. One of several. There's a number of them, but these guys, their objective is to get bid axes out there to as many people as possible, as cheaply as possible. This decentralizes the network, guys, and makes it more secure. Plus, it doesn't cost crap. I mean, these things are less than $200. And it costs you like $5 a month of electricity. You're 70 times more likely to win a block mining solo with one of these things than you are to win the Powerball lottery. I don't know. Those are pretty good odds, man, for $5 a month of electricity. Finally, we've got Punch Plate. Go check out punchplate.com. Love these guys. They have a very good seed plate. Basically, it's the metal plate that you back up your seed words on to protect your Bitcoin. Punchplate.com. All right, let's wrap up with some closing comments, and who wants to go?
I'll go. I'll just say, you know, there's a lot of different ways to say this, but, and you probably heard it said, but, you know, you're the average of the five people you surround yourself with, so choose wisely. And so just want to say thanks to everybody up here. It's been a fun 5 days getting this thing going again and being on stage and learning from you guys, your perspectives. And so, yeah, I just wanted to say thanks to everybody.
Thanks for being here, Bob.
Got to say, great conversation. Just the substance of this, the and where we need to go and all the hard work that's going to be put in building this parallel economy and using Freedom Tech. Unbelievable. Just super excited. You guys are killing it. 5 days now with this. Just great job.
Yeah, I have something really quick to say. This is a great space. I know it's going to be awesome in the future as well. But regarding the bid axis really quick, I think that's an understatement how good this thing's going to be in decentralizing and sort of the network and mining. When I first got mine from Nashville and the startup putting it together, I thought it was going to take a long time. It literally took like 5 minutes. I think that's 7 or 10 minutes or something at most. And it's already running. And I'm not expecting to, winning a block, whatever may be the case. It's just that feeling of decentralizing the network and feeling part of the network. That's so special, right? I'm running this thing and I just feel good about it. It doesn't matter. So I encourage people who are still kind of like questioning, okay, well, let's do anything, whatever. Just do it. You'll feel great about it. And, you know, it's going to help with everything in general. So, yeah.
Thanks, Tao. Anybody else? Coleman, closing comments.
Yeah, I think it was a great talk today. One little side note we didn't really get a chance to cover But I think that speech from RFK Jr. today is going to be pretty big. So I would just watch out for that.
Roger that. We'll keep an eye out. All right, then. That's a wrap. For those of you who are new here, catch us on Bitcoin Veterans video podcast once a week. We do it here on Twitter Spaces as well as multicast to other platforms. But we do it at 7 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays. Follow the Bitcoin Veterans handle to figure out when those drop. Also, if you want to know when these things are happening as far as, you know, when we're doing spaces, you can also follow the Bitcoin Veterans handle. They're basically going to be at 10 a.m. every day, Monday through Friday. We're going to keep rolling doing these. Thanks to the speakers who helped us do this. I really appreciate you guys. Coleman, Terrence, Wade, Gabe Lord, AC, Shane, Tao, Bob, and the others who've been up here. Appreciate you guys. Producer Jacob for producing the show. It's really important. Really admire the fact that people take their personal time. Nobody here is being paid. We are comping our producer because it's a really freaking hard job and he does a lot of heavy lifting in the background. But as far as speakers go, nobody's being paid to do this. You know, it's just part of being on the mission. Teaching people about this bright orange future is super important. One of the most important things, I think, for those of us who are vets anyway, most important mission I've ever had in my life, man. Like, this really matters a lot to the future of our kids, our grandkids, and for freedom. So, thanks for being here. We will see you all tomorrow. Love all of you guys. Everybody go out there. Have a great day today and crush it.